tu sahana om hunaktu sahaviryan karavavahai tejasvinavadhi tamastoma vidvishavahai om shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 40. The demigods continued, "These are inquiries. The ordinary conditioned soul is subject to the material laws, and he thus receives the fruits of his actions. Does your lordship, like an ordinary human being, exist within this material world in a body produced by the material modes? Do you enjoy or suffer the good or bad results of action under the influence of time, past work, and so forth? Or, on the contrary, are you present here only as a neutral witness, who is self-sufficient, free from all material desires, and always full of spiritual potency? We certainly cannot understand your actual position." Srila Prabhupada comments. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he descends to this material world for two purposes, namely, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Cha Dushkritam, Bhagavad Gita 4.8, to relieve the devotees and kill demons or non-devotees. These two kinds of action are the same for the absolute truth. That means to relieve the devotees, to kill the demons. Because by killing the demons, you relieve the devotees. You know, and you relieve the devotees by killing the demons. So for Krishna, they're the same thing. Right? Because, in other words, he's acting, it doesn't matter because he's only acting for the living entity's benefit. Right? So that's always, that principle is always there. But the other thing is that doing things for the devotees means you're benefiting the devotees and creating a nice atmosphere for the devotees. When the Lord comes to punish the demons, he bestows his favor upon them. And similarly, when he delivers his devotees and gives them relief, he also bestows his favor. Thus, the Lord bestows his favor equally upon the conditioned souls. When a conditioned soul gives relief to others, he acts piously, and when he gives trouble to others, he acts impiously. But the Lord is neither pious nor impious. He is always full in spiritual potency, by which he shows equal mercy to the punishable and the protectable. Because he's just reciprocating according to their nature. So they surrender in one way, so he reciprocates in that way. So one comes in the form of protection, the other comes in the form of destruction. Does that make sense? Because they surrender to the Lord in that way, right? They're favorable towards the Lord, or they're not favorable towards the Lord. So he reciprocates with that mood. The Lord is apapa vidham. He's never contaminated by the reactions of so-called sinful activities. When Krishna was present on this earth, he killed many inimical non-devotees, but they all received swarupya. In other words, they return to their original spiritual bodies. One who does not know the Lord's position says that God is unkind to him but merciful to others. Actually, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9.29, Soham sarvabhuteshu na me dvesho sti na priya. I am equal to everyone. No one is my enemy and no one is my friend. But he also says, Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mayi teshu chapyaham. One becomes my devotee and fully surrenders unto me. I give him special attention. Right? So he just reciprocates with however you deal with him. But if you deal with him in devotion, he gives special attention. Because then he gives the attention not as the Lord, but as himself. Yes?
In unical non-devotees, they receive sarupya, not sarupya.
Prabhupada is saying here Swarupi, because at some point then they come to that, because if they get killed by the Lord, they merge in Brahman, then from there, since they're purified, when they get to the point of wanting to be active, then they'll remember the Lord. So then from there, they'll go back to the spiritual world. Like that. So that their position is unique. Is that, yeah. The demigods continued, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, all contradictions can be reconciled in you. O Lord, since you are the Supreme Person, the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities, the Supreme Controller, your unlimited glories are inconceivable to the conditioned souls. Many modern theologians argue about right and wrong without knowing what is actually right. Their arguments are always false and their judgments inconclusive because they have no authorized evidence with which to gain knowledge of you. Because their minds are agitated by scriptures containing false conclusions, they are unable to understand the truth concerning you. Right? So this modern concept has always been there. So this story is quite old. And so the demigods are talking about modern theologians. Right? So modern simply means non-Vedic. That's all. They don't follow the Vedas. That makes them modern. So that's why it's one can say, you know, but how do you understand what's going on now? This mentality's always been there. It's just that now it may be quite prominent. Yes.
I think that this is what? Satyayuga?
That I'm not sure.
And there's still some modern theologians?
It means there's always going to be modern theologians. It's just a matter of how prominent they are. Nowadays, then they're very prominent. Well, previously, then there were less. Like before, it was there would be some tribals and less, you know, and mostly non-tribal. Now there's more, you know, tribals than non-tribals. So it's just a matter of the proportion. But otherwise, all things are always there. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. It's reality. So the Vedic system is just always there. It's just a matter of when, what's the main proportion? Really? Oh, really? That's in Russian. Nothing new under the moon. Okay. Yeah. I guess that's a higher understanding because the moon's higher. So that includes the sun. Right? Yeah. Furthermore, because of polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusion, their theories are incapable of revealing you, or are transcendental to their material conceptions. You are one without a second, and therefore in you, contradictions like doing and not doing, happiness and distress, are not contradictory. Your potency is so great that it can do and undo anything as you like. With the help of that potency, what is impossible for you? Since there is no duality in your constitutional position, you can do everything by the influence of your energy. So, because they're trying, these modern theologians are trying to understand the Lord through their intelligence and through their own made-up concepts of things. So they can't actually understand the Lord. You know, that's the point. Then you have the aspect of his potencies are such that he has a potency that is a potency that can reconcile seeming contradictions. So you have potencies that seem different from each other, and then there's a potency that makes them all reconcile with each other. So, you know, what can't he do? That's the point. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, this verse reconciles the contradictory nature in the Lord, according to the devotee's perspective. Virodha means contradiction. Quote, there is no contradiction of your being Atmarama and experiencing happiness and distress. It is not proper to speculate about you by comparison with others, since you possess inconceivable powers. It should be understood that you have no material happiness and distress at all, which arises from ignorance, since you are fully endowed with those six qualities. Right? So he feels happiness and distress, but they're not material happiness and distress. So that's the thing, is that he's Atmarama, but he can feel happiness and distress. So that's in relationship to the devotee. But it's a matter of happiness being with the devotee, distress being separated from the devotee. same time, there's no material because he's full with all transcendental qualities. That's the point of this seeming contradictions.
Yes.
Yes, yes, because hunger is a matter of reciprocation. Right? Because if you're hungry, then someone can make something for you. No, no. It's a matter of just that's a way to interact. You know what I'm saying? The point is that the devotee can render these kind of service if Krishna would like to reciprocate in these kind of services. So therefore, that's because taste is in particular areas. Rasa is in particular areas. So therefore, the devotees and the Lord reciprocate in those areas. Right? You know, so eating is one of them. So you know, the senses are there, so interacting with the senses. We're not looking for another sense. Right? The senses that we have, we're fine with. We're good. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The Lord might respond, "Do I have another type of happiness and distress in me?" To which the demons would reply, you have a host of unlimited qualities such as being controlled by prema and being affectionate to your devotees. Apari mita guna gane. When your devotees such as Pallad or Vibhishana, your eternal associates such as the Pandavas or Yadavas, the numerous sadhakas and half-devotees like us devatas, are put into difficulty by the demons, you become unhappy, indicated by your various attempts to destroy those demons. When those devotees diverted from danger see you, they become happy, like grain suffering from drought being sprinkled with a shower of nectar. Then you become astonishingly happy. You have spiritual happiness and distress, since you are the essence of affection for devotees and are controlled by prema. However, that happiness and distress are actually spiritual happiness, since they are the topmost transformations of the chit shakti belonging to prema. Right, so they're not happiness and distress in the material world. They're transformations within the spiritual nature, because they're always about the spiritual interaction with the Lord. Right? The joy and relief, grief of the gopis or Sita arising from meeting and separation are the highest expression of happiness, since they have the highest level of prema. Having a spiritual form, you have spiritual happiness and distress. This is not a contradiction with your nature as Atmarama, since being Atmarama and experiencing spiritual happiness and distress are one of you. Right? So Atmarama means there's no need of anything material. Right? So he's satisfied in the self. But within the self, then he becomes even more satisfied in the interaction with devotees. The Lord may reply, "But I am not defined in this way by some philosopher." So it's interesting the way he's doing it, how, you know, how he makes it. There's a question and then there's the answer. The question is the doubt. And here the Lord's making the doubts, right? And then the devotees are answering. The Lord may reply, "But I am not defined in this way by some philosophers." To which the demigods reply, "You are the Supreme Lord, Ishware, and thus those who are under your control are not qualified to define you, since your glories cannot be understood by persons devoid of bhakti. You yourself say, 'Bhaktiaham ekaya grahya,' I am only realized by bhakti." Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21. The Lord may reply, "They raise many objections to your claim that my six great qualities and prema are spiritual." To which the devotees respond, "But so..." So these here is that we mentioned before is he had seven qualities. So here it can be the six and prema as the seventh. Or it can be those other seven qualities. Right? To which the devatas respond.
Mm-hmm. Why would prema be considered as a quality?
Because it's everything he does is about love.
Such as love?
No, it's not about unlimited, it's just that he has. You know what I'm saying? It means he being unlimited, naturally there's unlimited. But it's about having. Because it's about the quality, not about the quantity. Because the relationship is based on quality, not quantity. Does that make sense? Like that. Because he has unlimited, therefore he can interact with unlimited devotees. But the point is each devotee is interacting with Krishna based on the qualities that are common between the devotee and the Lord. That's it. Okay, the devotees, the Lord may reply, they raise many objections to your claim that my six great qualities and prema are spiritual, to which the devotees respond. You are invisible to the arguments of those who stubbornly hold various philosophies. Dura, Vagraha, Vadinam, which always remain in their hearts, which are confused by scriptures and without touching the real truth. Aravachina. Vikalpa takes the form, it may be like this or like this. Vitarka means uncertain conjecture. Is that correct, perhaps? Vichara means certainly, it is like this. Pramana bhasha means malicious arguments. Quote, if there is no conclusion, how can argumentation be absent? Right. So, if there's not a conclusion, there will always be argument. Right? And in modern theologies, there can't be a conclusion. That's how modern theology functions. Is that if it's not Vedic, means then it is speculative. So they have to argue.
I agree with that, because in various school of thoughts that I sometimes visit them, they cannot reach a conclusion.
Yes.
And each scholar differs from the other.
Yes.
And he secretly blames the other.
Yes.
Once I did an investigation with this philosophy, I went to 22 scholars, the so-called scholars,
yeah,
and none respects the conclusion of the others.
Yes.
And everyone says the other is wrong, but don't tell him. It's something between you and me, don't tell him.
Yes.
So I found this, that there is not an alternative conclusion.
Yes. Yes. Happened. Yes, yes. So that's the point here, is that they're going to have all these different things. It may be like this or like this. So they'll choose according to what they prefer. It may be this or this, you know, I prefer this. Or they even just prefer that it could be this or this, so there isn't any way to get to a conclusion. Right? Or the other is that uncertain conjecture. Is that correct? Perhaps. But perhaps it's missed. You know, many times the academics will do that. There's this, and that. So perhaps it could be this. It means this could be a solution for this. That's considered one of the nicer, you know, more intellectual ways of answering things. You know, if you discuss like that, the academics are so happy. Right? But when you come to conclusion, when there's vichar, you know, it is certainly like this, then they become upset. Because then they can't conjecture anymore. Right? So. The Lord is devoid of any material objects, since arguments are a product of Maya Shakti, and you are beyond all objects made of Maya. How is it possible to use such arguments? Right? So he's not. All these arguments are coming from Maya because there's all the variety and no conclusion, right, in the Lord. He's beyond, so how could there be any argument? Right? His position is one. Right? The Lord may question, how can you say that my grief is spiritual happiness? Since everyone has seen with their eyes my actions of helping you churn the ocean, helping Arjuna as his charioteer and messenger, and fleeing in fear from Jarasandha's violence to protect the Yadavas. To which the demigods reply, though you are pure spirit, Kevale, without material contamination, You place in the middle your inconceivable yoga maya. Thus nothing is impossible for you. Who then can enter into your experience of happiness? One cannot use sense perception to understand the Lord's happiness. It is said, achintya kalau ye bhava natams tarkena yojayet. One cannot apply material arguments to what is inconceivable. right? Because what's beyond the conceivable, you can't apply the arguments of the conceivable. Right? Because it's inconceivable, it's beyond that. So you can't apply. So Krishna is saying, no, but everybody's seen me do all these things. But they're replying, no, through the senses you can't actually understand what's the absolute. Right? So just because everybody's seen doesn't mean what they're seeing is actually the idea that, no, you are dealing on the material platform. Right? So for Krishna, it's fun to discuss like this. Right? He's arguing that, no, I'm not, you know, there's faults there. And then the devotee's pointing, no, there's no faults. Right? So that's the thing. He's beyond faults, so it's fun to play in that way. Thus the Lord may say, let us dispose of the argument that I have inconceivable powers. One can say that I have two forms with two sets of qualities. In the form of Bhagavan, I have happiness and distress arising from affection to my devotees. And in the form of Brahman, I am situated everywhere as Atmarama. But the Devata's response would be, you do not have two forms. You have only one form, which is Bhagavan. That form is realized as Brahman with no qualities and as Bhagavan with astonishing qualities. The jnanis who are at a distance and cannot perceive your astounding qualities call you Brahman. The devotees who are situated near you and can perceive your astonishing qualities call you Bhagavan. If one is far away, one perceives a small degree of the Lord. And if one is close, one perceives all his qualities. So he's saying that, no, but you could say there's two forms. There's my form is Brahman, there's my form is Bhagavan. So in this way, you can say that they're two different things. Right? But then the devotees are saying, no, there's only one. There's only you as Bhagavan. Brahman is understood if you're farther away, so you only see the generic qualities. Then you call it, then you understand only Brahman. Because Brahman is Lord's qualities, but generic. That's why it says his qualities. So they're unlimited qualities, but his astonishing qualities or astounding qualities, this is the interaction with the devotees. That's the personal. So Bhagavan position is higher. So, yeah? Yes?
Can we say everything emanates from Bhagavan?
Yes.
The Brahman, everything?
Yes, it's just a matter of your perspective. When you're seeing the Lord, but only seeing his qualities from a distance means you only see the quality. You don't see the interaction. Then you are only seeing Brahman. Right? I mean, he's great. He's all-pervading. He's all-knowing. That's Brahman. Right? We attribute it to the person because they come from the person. Because we know that he interacts. But if you don't know about him as a person, you only see the in-person. So it's just a matter of seeing the same person just from a distance. Yes? Yes, just to engage them. You know, because they're mentioning all these nice prayers, how he's on the transcendental platform. But at the same time, he then brings up all these things of how it could be perceived not on that platform. So they have to answer it. So that focuses them more on the Lord. Otherwise, they would focus more on the results they want to get from the Lord. Yeah? Yes, and then that's also, the way the modern theologians work. Let us dispose of the argument that I have inconceivable power. So just because they say, let's drop this, then they think, so now this is going to be... Does that make sense? So, but that doesn't make it more correct. You know, if we say, let us say that there's only three colors, there's, there's only green, purple, and chartreuse. You know, so then, let us dispose of all these other colors. You know, so now let's discuss, but that's not a discussion. It's just something that people do. It's convenient for them. You're always talking about this. Let us leave that. Let's discuss on this basis. But that's not, the Lord still is who he is.
Can I ask a question? One time I was in Dharamshala at the Tibetan Buddhist when we met the Dalai Lama, maybe 10 years, 15 years back, something like that. and some or other one in charge of the library, I was discussing with him, they consider the Dalai Lama or Buddha, whichever a person reaches the Bodhisattva level, they consider they are above the realm of devas, including Krishna and all these things, because they consider that the devas, they need to experience things, they need to go into all what is sensorial testing or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he considered that those who get enlightened through Buddhism are superior to the devas in Hinduism even.
Mm-hmm.
So what in the presentation of anti-Vedic that Lord Buddha made, and they are considered to be very intelligent, and what he based his presentation to deny even Bhagavan and even Brahma, because the Sunyavada is different.
No, but
from
he
the
doesn't
Bhagavan.
Get into that.
Sorry?
See, is Buddha just takes him away from the Veda and concentrates on the transcendental aspect. Then, due to the modes of nature, then people will construe all these other things. Because Buddha doesn't even talk about devas or anything. This has all been introduced when Buddhism is mixed with Tantra. Then you get the Purusha, the Prakriti, and time. So then you start to get all these different things. So those are coming by, Buddhism is always mixed. So in the life of Buddha, the time when pure Buddhism was actually being presented was very short. Even in his own lifetime, all these other things became introduced. Because the main point was take them away from the Vedas, that they're using the animal sacrifices to kill animals for the sense gratification. So that's been accomplished. And so then their speculation, that keeps them busy for a few thousand years until Shankaracharya comes. So there. So karma is, those on the platform of jnana are always considered higher than those on the platform of karma. So that you can say, but the point is they don't understand how Krishna is transcendental and beyond.
Yeah, that's what we're talking. I was thinking Buddhism. They are
no, but the demigods is one thing, but Krishna they don't know. That's the thing, they can't understand what actually is transcendence. So they're far away. So they can only see the Brahman aspect of the Lord. But even they are only seeing nothingness. They're not even seeing properly the Brahman. It's kind of like the negative aspect of, remove the qualities of Brahman, that's what they see. And then Shankaracharya bases his philosophy on that. He just uses Vedic evidence. So he's actually preaching Buddhism with Vedic evidence.
The Dalai Lama himself told me, because I asked him this question when we met him, he said, we are waiting for Maitreya Buddha to appear to declare obsolete all the teachings of Sakyamuni Buddha. Because each Buddha that comes, he declares obsolete the previous Buddha. So that means they will never have an absolute truth which is transcend time and place and circumstances. They are waiting someone to declare obsolete what they know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I found it very weird in this case. No?
Yeah, no, because they just want to speculate. That's the whole point. Therefore, it may be like this or this, or perhaps this is correct. That it's just to keep them busy, that's all. That's all. That's the point. Buddha just keeps them busy. You know, like Shankara just keeps then the next step in Buddhism busy. So it's not until Ramanuja comes, then again the proper Vaishnava Siddhanta is given. So if one is far away, one perceives a small degree of the Lord, and if one is close, one perceives all his qualities. So in bhakti, you're close, you perceive all, so you see him as Bhagavan. If you're far away, you only perceive a little bit, because it's just he's great, he's supreme, he's all-pervading, or all-knowing, like this. Then you only get a little bit, so that's the impersonal. Srila Prabhupada adds, we should not be astonished to find contradictions in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, there are no contradictions. That is the meaning of his being supreme. Because he is all-powerful, he is not subject to the conditioned soul's arguments regarding his existence or non-existence. He is pleased to protect his devotees by killing their enemies. He enjoys both the killing and the protecting. Such freedom from duality applies not only to the Lord, but also to his devotees. In Vrindavan, the damsels of Brajabhumi enjoy transcendental bliss in the company of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. and they feel the same transcendental bliss in separation when Krishna and Balaram leave Vrindavan for Mathura. There is no question of material pains or pleasures for either the Supreme Personality of Godhead or His pure devotees, although they are sometimes superficially said to be distressed or happy. One who is Atmarama is blissful in both ways. Because if you're dealing with the transcendental position, it doesn't matter which one you're looking at. It's just a matter of if you're in contact or not in contact. That's the point. But since Krishna is everything, you're always in contact. That's why there's happiness. But because you don't have that personal interaction, therefore it's perceived of as separation. And so that gives the flavor of seeming distress, but it's actually the highest happiness. Because you're contacting Krishna, so it's going to be happiness. But it gives a different flavor than contacting Him personally or not being in that personal contact. Therefore, Sambhogan and Vipalamba, they have two different flavors. Non-devotees cannot understand the contradictions present in the Supreme Lord or His devotees. So they'll perceive them as contradictions, they can't understand them. But actually there's no contradictions. So the point is, one's not astonished to find contradictions because it's contradictory compared to our, you know, based on our material vision. But actually, there are no contradictions. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Bhakti Amam Abhijanati. Bhagavad Gita 18:55. The transcendental pastimes can be understood through devotional service. To non-devotees, they are inconceivable. So, if you have devotional service, the Lord reveals Himself. If you don't, then you can't understand Him since He's beyond the senses. So no one can understand Him. Yes.
Well, we say that the Lord can be understood by the mercy of His devotees. Means they can reveal Him, or He reveals Himself because they want to get mercy?
They're the same thing. Because the Lord's mercy follows the mercy of the devotees. Right? The devotee wants to give the mercy, then the Lord wants to give that mercy. Right? So that's the position that it follows. Because let's see. That's why it's all about devotion, and that devotion means that service to the Lord. Right? You know, through the spiritual master, through the devotees. So we can please the Lord through serving the Lord and the devotees. Without the devotees, you can't actually serve the Lord. So the Lord is performing His pastimes with the devotees. So they're the same. Is that what it is? Yeah. I don't know why we're hot today. The demigods continue. A rope causes fear for a bewildered person who considers it a snake, but not for a person with proper intelligence who knows it to be only a rope. Right? So, seeing the rope as a snake, that's the contradiction that comes up from the mundane vision. So, that's why we say they're so-called contradictions. So, we're not, that one doesn't know the Lord, He's not revealed Himself, then these contradictions will come up. Because Krishna is tattva. He is conclusion. So, if you don't have Krishna, then you don't have conclusion. That means you'll always have argument. You'll always have difference of opinion. Does that make sense? Similarly, you as the super soul in everyone's heart inspire fear or fearlessness according to one's intelligence. But in you there is no duality. So someone wants to know the Lord, He reveals Himself. Someone doesn't want to know the Lord, He doesn't reveal Himself. So that fear of the rope as a snake, or the non-fear of the rope as a snake, is both inspired by the Lord. So it depends upon what someone wants. So he can say, no, I want to know the Lord, that means I want to serve the devotees. Wanting to know the Lord means serving the devotees, because it's only through the devotees can we know the Lord. Because He reciprocates with the devotees, so why is He in that particular mood or form? Because of the devotees He's with. Yes.
Then you said the fact
or we don't want enough. You know, it means that we would just like to know because it would be a good thing to know, just like, you know, it would be nice to know what's the, you know, capital city of Guatemala or something, you know. You know, it's interesting, you know. You know, like you heard before, earlier in the year, what's the point of this question? Oh, it's just to be interesting. It's interesting. So that's not what we're talking about. The jigyasu is not what we're talking about. So that, but the point is they're approaching the Lord, so they're learning something about the Lord, because they are applying it to the Lord. But to understand these aspects, how the Lord, you know, only through devotion is known, and that means devotion as given by the devotees. Because the devotees have devotion. So we follow in their footsteps. Therefore we see the Lord they see. Right? Does that make sense? So if you want to see the Lord in Vaikuntha, you follow those devotees. You want to see the Lord in Dwarka, you follow those devotees. You want to see the Lord in Braj, you follow those devotees. Because they have that particular affection, therefore the Lord reveals himself in that particular way. So for us, it's very specific. Right? You know what I'm saying? Let's say Goloka Vrindavan is 51% of 3/4. Of unlimited, right? So it's big, right? And so of that, we generally, you know, give the general thing is that it has its different quarters. So one part of that is Vrindavan. So even if we're taking it in this way, 25% of 51% of 3/4 of unlimited, right? So that means there's even unlimited manifestations of Vrindavan. So the idea is that it's all Vrindavan. Yes, it is. But which aspect of that all Vrindavan do you want to see? So we're interested in seeing that Vrindavan, you know, that Lord of Vrindavan that is seen by Rupa Goswami, right? Who is the intimate associate or servant of Srimati Radharani. Right? So Brajaraja, that's who we want to see. So that particular flavor is there. And then we know that connection through Srila Prabhupada. Right? So we're very specific about where we want to be standing because there's unlimited options. And yes, you'll be in Vrindavan, but we want to be there and see that Braja Krishna that Prabhupada sees. And if we just say, oh, it's all one, it's like, say what you like. But this is where we're going to stand. You stand wherever you want to stand. We don't care. But this is where we want to stand. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that very, very clear. Is that all the other devotees we have respect for because they're all servants of Krishna. But we don't want to be standing next to all those others. We want to be standing next to our acharya. And then in that line, that's where we want to go. Otherwise, then, yes, you know, I'm sure during certain pastimes we'll all bump into each other. You know, one big happy family. But on a daily basis, you can't guarantee that. You know what I'm saying? You know, we hear about the Maharas, millions and millions of gopis. But in a particular pastime, there's Radharani, her particular friends, and a set amount of assistants. So that would be the daily that we'll deal on. That is not that there's not unlimited elements that then open up and you know, so many groups all come together. But we want to be in this particular group. We don't want to be standing somewhere else. So all this is, oh, it doesn't matter as long as it's somewhere in the spiritual. That's not our move. Does that make sense? So it's very specific, you know. So that's the.
Maharaj, there is one Vrindavan. There's one Goloka. For example, in the material world, each universe has Brahma Loka and Satya Loka and all these things, no? But in the spiritual realm, you see different Vrindavans, unlimited Vrindavan. There is one single Goloka Vrindavan.
Goloka Vrindavan is a planet. There's one.
It's one.
But it doesn't mean that there's not unlimited.
Expanded or manifested.
Yeah, manifestations of the pastimes. Because there's unlimited devotees. Is this all very clear? That's why we're very, very specific about the Acharya said this, this is what we're going to follow. And so using, as you know, the demigods are talking about, the modern theologians, you know. So if we become influenced by the modern theologians, that we think, well, you know, maybe there's some, you know, it should be like this, it should be like that, and, you know, oh, this is too strong, or, you know, shouldn't we be more liberal, and all these things, is great. Go wherever you want to go. You know, I said, go wherever you want to go, be whatever you want to be, do whatever you want to do. Go for it. But if you want to be, you know, with Braja Krishna, then here's the opportunity. This is the line. Take it. You know what I'm saying? And if it's just a matter of getting there, great. Then it's a matter of being in the situation. But what happened to prema? What if it's about love for Krishna, love for those devotees? That makes it very specific. Does that make sense?
Can I ask for more elaboration on that topic? Let's say some people die in the dump, but they are not on the standard of those who are following acharyas in a strict way. Let's say like devotees. If they get liberated for X, Y, or Z reason because they're ambassadors, their relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world won't be intimate, won't be close relationship, he might take birth.
No, but this is a different discussion. This is what we're talking now,
yeah.
And your question are two different topics. You know what I'm saying? There's common words, but they're two different topics. What we're talking about is the commitment to, just as we're committed to Krishna as Bhagavan, not as God, we're committed to the Acharyas as people, not just as, you know, advanced devotees. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise someone will say, oh, we're in this line, that line, it doesn't, you know, as long as it all gets there. Like that. We're saying it's very specific. Prabhupada is a specific person. We want to be with him. Not just we want to, you know, we'll get us to the spiritual realm. That's one thing. What you're talking about is someone may not be very advanced, but dying in the dawn, if they remember Krishna, then they go to where Krishna's pastimes are being performed in the material world. Then in the association of the eternal associates, they develop that love, and therefore then they go. So it's two different points.
No, but in your point, be more strict in following the Acharya, to be with him.
Yes, as a person.
Does it make you, at the time of going back to Godhead, does it make you more intimate to Krishna compared to other who is not that much strict? Let me give an example.
No, but okay.
It doesn't work like that.
No, you can. The point is, let's see your example. No, give your example, please.
For example, if someone is graduated with 12 over 20 and one is graduated 20 over 20, it's excellent and one is average.
It's about the commitment. It's about the mood of commitment. It's about the commitment to the person. Just like, I don't remember if it was Sudama or one other. But it was devotee who, you know, when Prabhupada was here, is doing very nice service and all that, and after Prabhupada left, then they were not doing such great service. Basically, just kind of, you know, out there in the ozone. Then I think it was, then they get, you know, some kind of terminal illness that generally is a serious wake-up call. And, you know, they come back into the association of the devotees. And so, you know, but then just a few weeks. So this one devotee that I remember, because that's what I'm saying, I may be mixing stories here, but the point is the same, is that they're in a coma. So there's nothing's there. And then suddenly devotees are there. They just sit up. And they say, Prabhupada, you came. Right? And then they're gone. Huh? That was Sudama. So it has nothing to do with how strictly you're following. It's a matter of your commitment to the person. That's what I'm talking about here. Does that make sense? So otherwise, you know, I think Sudama, when they did the Remembering Prabhupada videos, Sudama did it wearing a sari.
Wearing a sari?
Sari, yeah. Sorry? He looked good, yeah, yeah. No. You should have seen him in the long Vrindavan coat that he had. That he also looked good. Yeah. We're talking about something very different here. We're not talking about the seriousness and the sadhana. We're talking about the commitment to the person. Does that make sense?
Can we measure the commitment?
It's not. We're not talking numbers. This is not time and space. This is not what we're talking about.
It's sincerity, devotion.
Okay, let us... Okay, since it's not working, let us be very specific. I was trying to avoid being very specific. There is many in the Gaudiya lines. And for some devotees, they'll consider it doesn't matter which Gaudiya line, we're all going to the same place. And technically, yes, they'll all get to Brajavrindavan, yes. But I don't want to be in that part of Brajavrindavan where Prabhupada's not. And since they're not really necessarily very seriously following Prabhupada, they've taken someone else as the person to follow. I don't talk meaning people who have joined, gone from the gutter into Krishna consciousness by the preaching effort of other lines of the Gaudiya mission. I'm talking about ones who, by Prabhupada's arrangement and his devotees, have made devotees, and now they're off with another group. Though they'll say, no, it's all the same place, but I beg to differ. Bhaktivinoda Thakur doesn't agree with that. Bhagavan is specific. He's a person. His specific feelings, desires. We want to be in that place where those feelings and desires are being experienced by the line that, you know, to Rupa Goswami through our Acharya. So we're very specific like that. Otherwise, in bigger programs where there's more devotees involved, yes, we'll all be one big happy family. But on a daily basis, we're not one big happy family. We're very specific where we are. So in other words, we're committed to a specific person. That's why all this discussion, well, the acharyas say this and that, and there's some contradiction, or, well, I don't know, but does it apply to the modern situation? And, you know, all this stuff, modern theology. All that kind of stuff, that's going to slow things down a lot. If there's that commitment to the person, then even if those things come up, things will work out. But it means commitment to the person. So you see a lot of times the earlier devotees, they're totally committed to Prabhupada. They don't always understand more of the, you know, later developments in the society and the great bigness of it and more institutional of it. All they just know, they do what they do because Prabhupada did like that. That's all. So they're committed to the person.
They are more protected when they are more committed by this person? Can you see it like that?
In other words, we don't want to take it off in these directions. The point is just understand that Krishna is a person, commitment to him as a person, and commitment to those who are his persons is what we're trying to do. What we're just defining is Bhagavan. So then from there you take it into what am I going to get on the Brahman and Paramatma platform. That's what the questions come back to. You know, what percentage, what volume, what this measurable, that's Paramatma and Brahman. But Krishna, it's just about the affection. It's not about measurement. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. So the general thing is we are committed to following the spiritual master and carrying out their instructions. That's what we're committed to. By doing that, then everything becomes perfect. Because why? Because Krishna is pleased. Because Krishna is not approached directly, he's approached through the devotees. So when we're committed to the devotees, then Krishna is more pleased. That's why things go better. So there's not a way to be more committed to Krishna without being more committed to his devotees. So the symptom of commitment to Krishna is the commitment to the devotees. But The point is the commitment to devotees means commitment to Krishna, because that's what they're giving. So they're non-different. Does this make sense? It means it is always going to be mercy. Because basically speaking, if you're taking those who are from a background of, you know, speculative sense gratification, where is the commitment to sadhana? You know what I'm saying? It's not part of their nature. So because Prabhupada's recommended it, and because of that they endeavor for it, that's why they get it. It's not that we have such pious backgrounds that, you know, we've been getting up in the morning for, you know, Brahma Muhurta and taking our bath and doing our morning pujas and our japas and worshipping, you know, after our bath, going and touching the cows, doing our yajnas and doing everything all very nice and pukka, right? And that's our normal lifestyle. Then along comes Krishna consciousness, and now, wow, okay, now we do this all for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? There are devotees from such backgrounds, but that's not us. You know what I'm saying? So unless if you were born in a high grade smarta family, or you know, a sampradayic Vaishnava family who you know generationally does these things. You know what I'm saying? Like one teacher we had. You know, when his father would take bath in the morning, he'd be chanting Vishnu Sahasranam. And that would be every day. You know, so it's not just occasionally or this or that. They're so regulated that every day their life is exactly the same.
Is it mechanical, falls into mechanical things instead of devotion?
No, please don't take the example as it is. See, so we're talking flavors here. We have to avoid this. Do you see where the questions are going? That's what you were doing. You understand? That's what we were talking about. You know what I'm saying? It's not about the point, it's about the words. You know, because there is a thing, oh, you can do this and be mechanical. We're not discussing that. We have to be able to understand that there is such a thing as piety, where they can do everything day in, day out. It's just they're stable. We're not used to it. Because in the West, if someone's like that, we'll say the life is boring, and this, because it is. Right? But in Krishna consciousness, it's not, because it's ever fresh, because it's always about Krishna. So it's said that the Goswamis, their sadhana was written in stone. Like Raghunath Das, what he would do exactly, his offering obeisance to 2,000 Vaishnavas every day, he'd do that every day. Not some days it was, you know, 1,999, and some days it was a few more. It was always exactly the same, same time, same everything. Because they're so fixed in just pleasing the Lord. There's no material desire, so there's nothing to distract. We get distracted by material desire. You know, instead of going to bed, we, you know, get into a conversation with somebody, so the next morning we're tired, so therefore we want to sleep in more, and then it just snowballs and keeps on going like that. You know what I'm saying? But they just do these because they have no other desire. So we're talking about that. We're not talking about niyamagraha, where someone gets into the rules and regulations but doesn't actually understand the primary aspect. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about just the piety of devotional service. And you do have those who materially have that kind of piety on the material platform. But that's generally not us. We have devotees like that in the movement. So for them, the sadhana that we have, that we're talking about, is so difficult and so this and so fanatic. For them, that's the lifestyle that they did, their parents did, their grandparents did, their great-grandparents did, and they can tell you seven generations. They can tell you names of who did like that. Before that, they don't know. They just know if seven generations is generally considered it kept going. But you do have families like that. You know. So there are individuals like that. There's not many, but they are there. So someone from that background, then you could say maybe they have the piety, they could get, you know, like this. But us, if we're fixed in sadhana, that's only by the Lord's mercy. The other, of course, is mercy, but it's because of commitment to piety. They have that fixed. Then they transfer that into devotional service. Right? Or they came already on that level of devotional service, and then they... But for us, it's, you know, any regulation other than eating, sleeping, mating, and defending by whatever whim comes to our mind at the moment, that's our sadhana. You know, so then if we're able to do something regulated, that's by the Lord's mercy. Then we understand. And that's gained by serving the devotees. Right? We hear from the acharyas, this is how you're supposed to serve Krishna. And so we become inspired. You know, Haridas Thakur is chanting, Ajamiyo is chanting one name, and he's becoming protected by the Lord. Does that make sense? That's what we're discussing. So it's that kind of point. It's not about the practice itself. We're not discussing the secondary aspect at this point. Not that it's not a very good topic to discuss, but we're just saying that the theme that's being pointed out now is not that. It's about the primary aspect about him as a person and how he seemingly is contradictory from our vantage point, just like the rope looks like a snake. But actually, the rope's not a snake, so actually there's no contradiction. That's the point we're getting at. So therefore, someone being fixed in that, that's very important. And by that, that's going to please the Lord very much, because it's about following the devotees. So if we follow the devotees, the Lord gives his mercy. Therefore, we can understand him. So if we surrender to the devotees, Krishna surrenders to us. That's the whole point. But if we don't surrender to the devotees, he doesn't surrender to us. Why? Because we're devotees. Right? He surrenders to devotees. If we're not surrendered to devotees, where's the common platform of relationship? Right? You know, one person likes sailing, another person likes sailing, they have something to talk about. So for us, if the devotees are the most important, that's because then we have a relationship with Krishna, who, for Krishna, the devotees are the most important. So we have a relationship with Krishna through the devotees. That's the secret. That's what Bhagavatam is revealing. And so why is it that? It's because he's a person. Yes, he's God, he's Brahman, he's all-pervading, but that's not his prominent aspect. The prominent aspect is he's Bhagavan, he's a person. Supreme person, yes, but the point is he's a person. And him being a person, then there's no contradiction to all his position. Because otherwise, say, oh, he's a person, then he's affected by the modes. He's not. He's the origin of what personal is. Right? Because actually, in the material world, we call it personal, but it's not personal. Because it's about position and facility and all these different things. So it's actually not on the personal platform. Right? It's on the other platform, a position and authority and something you can calculate, you know, like modern science. It's on the senses. You can calculate, you know, so much percentage, so much like that. So this is beyond that. This is beyond calculation. So it's only experienced. Does that make sense? And it can only be experienced with transcendental senses. And so that's only by the Lord's grace, because he is transcendental senses. He is rasa. So we can only appreciate transcendental rasa by his grace. Is that right? Yeah. So in other words, all the points you're bringing up are valid points of discussion. It's just they're not actually technically connected with this point. Right? Because Krishna is unlimited, so all points are about him. And so each and every one of them, you can get to this point through. But it's right now we're just discussing that specific aspect. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes. Very good. Similarly, devotees who know a rope is one truth, but some mistake it for a snake, whereas others know it to be a rope. Similarly, devotees who know the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not see contradictions in Him, but non-devotees regard Him as the snake-like source of all fear. Right? So they think he is actually the problem. Because right? God, you know, is the one that, you know, all the problems come up. Yeah. For example, when Nrisimhadeva appeared, Prahlad Maharaj saw the Lord as the complete supreme solace, whereas his father, a demon, saw him as the ultimate death. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.37, Bhayam dvitiya bhinivesita syat. Fear results from being absorbed in duality. When one is in knowledge of duality, one knows both fear and bliss. The same Supreme Lord is a source of bliss to devotees and fear to non-devotees, who have a poor fund of knowledge. God is one, but people understand the absolute truth from different angles of vision. The unintelligent see contradictions in Him, but sober devotees find no contradiction. So He's seen from different angles of vision. So for the mature devotees, they don't see any contradictions in these different ways of seeing. Right? But for the non-devotees, they see that all these different aspects of connection to the Lord are different, and they don't reconcile. Right? So we see is that this fear comes up from duality. You see that? So that's the problem. When we see things in duality, so what is duality? Oneness means it's all connected to Krishna. Duality means we see something not connected to Krishna. Right? If we see it not connected to Krishna, we're seeing duality, therefore fear will be there. Does that make sense? So this seeing of duality, this is the beginning, or this is, you could say, the original sin. Right? So, does that make sense? So that's the actual problem. Right? Just like for a child. Do they see any difference, a real small child, do they see any difference between being dressed or not dressed? It just absolutely doesn't matter to them. They're both conditions of life. But, you know, but it doesn't matter to them. What does it mean when it matters to them? They see duality. Hence, you know, exit through the eastern gate of the garden. Right? Because then they're seeing with material vision. So, means here it's being more scientifically defined. The same things, that's what I said. Scriptures define these things. Scriptures have come from the Lord. So they're bona fide, but it's just how much they reveal, how much detail they get into. So therefore, for the devotees, they don't see any contradictions. The demigods continued. With deliberation, one will see the Supreme Soul, although manifested in different ways, is actually the basic principle of everything. So that's the thing. He is one soul, one person. So there's no contradiction in all the varieties of way to see Him. So the devotees don't see those contradictions. Others will. You know, well, here, you know, it's saying, you know, it says Prabhupada, even though he will speak so strongly about the Mayavadis, and the term, Sarva Kalvidam Brahma, right? That they say this, they say it's a Mahavakya, this, that, and he'll say it's all bogus. But so many of the times, to make this fact, Prabhupada will quote the Upanishad saying, Sarva Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is Brahma, everything's Krishna. So they see everything as Krishna, don't see any contradiction in everything being Krishna. How Krishna can be everything. It's just different angles of vision that you're seeing. But ultimately, it's about Krishna the person. So, all the different aspects of Krishna that we're seeing, how to engage them in the service of the person, Krishna, that's what we're trying to get to. While seeing everything connected to Krishna, and we may see things connected to us, but since we do see it connected to Krishna, we will get that benefit of seeing it connected to Krishna, so we will spiritually advance. But actually, the perfection is not just seeing everything in connection to Krishna. It's seeing everything in connection to the person, Krishna. Right? So in other words, I'm seeing, okay, I have a particular material desire. I can see how this material desire can be engaged in Krishna's service. Right? So, it's, you know, therefore it's connected, it's bona fide, I can do this. Does that make sense? So there's some activity, you know, that of the world that I like doing. But it's authorized by scripture. So therefore, I can do this. I'm happy. But why am I inspired to actually do it? Because of what I get from it. But ultimately, I'm doing things because of devotion to Krishna. Right? So that's what will carry me on to the higher. I've connected to Krishna, I'm purified, I will get those material facilities. But because it's to ultimately please Krishna, therefore I'll move forward. But it comes to the point where one day it's you see this opportunity is there, I could please Krishna by doing this. You understand? It's a different perspective. Externally looks exactly the same. So therefore, the question comes up about Priyavrata. How is it that someone on this platform of doing all karmas can come to the Paramahamsa platform? Or how is it someone on the Paramahamsa platform could ever do all these karmas? Because as a Paramahamsa, he doesn't see anything separate from Krishna. So he sees just opportunities to serve Krishna. As a brahmachari, then the opportunities are less, but enough to keep him busy 24/7. Right? As a grihastha, there's more wide range of opportunities. He just sees those all as opportunities to serve Krishna, not as sense gratification. Though he's doing all the same activities of any other grihastha. Well, not exactly any other. He was, you know, emperor of the world, but, you know, other than that fine detail, the general principle is the same. Does that make sense? So the point is that if you see it connected to Krishna, there's no problems. Like that. But if you see it how it's going to please Krishna, the person, that's what Krishna's talking about, Gita, Sarva Dharma, Parityaja. I'm not doing it because this is the Dharma. Dharma Shastra says this is what is my duties. And so I'm doing those to please Krishna. No, I'm pleasing Krishna. And I'm doing that in the performance of my duties. You understand? It's two different approaches to one thing. They're both Krishna. But one's Krishna in the form of rules as God, and the other is Krishna as a person. Does that make sense? So that's the distinction that's being made here. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is duties, according to your duties, you have like kind of two kind of duties, like grihastha or father, wife, mother, and also like...
You're not sure. Father, wife, mother, something. You're working on it, okay.
Father is like...
It's not talking about that either. It's about why would you preach? Why would you? Just to give an example, if we want to take that to its extreme. Okay. It's not an uncommon thing that you have devotees who are doing book distribution. Okay? Now, then the idea is that Lord Chaitanya wants everybody to come in contact with Krishna consciousness. And as Prabhupada points out, if someone comes in contact with the book, that's going to be more solid than just having a conversation. Now, if you have a conversation and they get a book, then that means, because nobody remembers. So then they can go back and look at the book and continue. So unless we have that constant interaction, then they're not going to get that constant connection. So therefore, the books are very important, because even if the person's not interested, right? Enough sukriti that they buy a book, but they won't read it. They stick it on the shelf. So we've heard, you know, stories of devotees where 20 years later, then they looked at this book and then they became a devotee, even though the person who bought it and put it on the shelf isn't. You know what I'm saying? You know, somebody is their devotee now, their father bought the book. You know, but you know, it's a book and he bought it, you know, so he's not going to waste money, he sticks it on the shelf, you know, so one day he'll read it, but he never does. And then the kid's poking around, run comes across the book, reads it, and then becomes a devotee. So like that, does that make sense? So therefore, from that position, then book distribution is, you could say, you know, one of your most prominent elements of preaching, right? Now, you'll have those who, understanding this, they're committed to book distribution. But at the same time, they have the idea that they're the only ones doing serious devotional service and everybody else is actually wasting their time. Right? So the temple devotees, everybody else, they're all, you know, not quite there. Even though they're very happy to come back to a temple, the Sunday feast, have a place, you know, there's a shower, there's things work there, rather than living out of a van, and there's prasadam, like that, but they don't take into consideration the Sankirtan, it means the complete kirtan, so that includes also the temple activities and all these kinds of stuff. But, you understand, so they have that point, so they're doing, you could say, the highest activity, but they're proud of it. So technically they're not, that means their position is really good, but their actual consciousness is not actually as developed. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
there's many like that. You know, at the same time, there's ones that are just the opposite. They're the books in, they're so committed, so surrendered, so, you know, like this. So the point is in every aspect of devotional service, you're going to have that wide range. You know what I'm saying? You have a congregation member who's more committed, a temple devotee who's, you know, more spaced out and less committed. So you're going to have the other, a spaced out community, very committed temple. You understand? So the point is it's individual based on the soul. So it's not about what you're doing. That's what we're meaning is Priyavrata as a brahmachari, he's fully absorbed in the Lord's service. And that small circle of activities that come within the purview of brahmachari, you know, duties, he performs and connected to the Lord. And then he becomes a grihastha, that range of engagement is widened, and he sees them all in connection to the Lord and just for the Lord's pleasure. And still, so he maintains his position as a paramahamsa. So he never was engaged in sense gratification. Though, he's a grihastha, he had, you know, how many, he had 10, he's the one that had 10 sons? Or 9 sons for each of the dvipas and
yeah,
like that?
9 sons.
That I don't remember if he, yeah, because he was the one before. And that comes down for the dvipas. And then from them, there was then the 9 varshas on Jambudvip. The next one of the sons was like this. Does that make sense? So what we're trying to distinguish here is it's actually the consciousness in Krishna. It's not what we're doing.
What state of consciousness things has been done? The state of consciousness?
Yes, yes,
things have
yes,
been done.
Yes, yes.
Maharaj, I want to ask you some question if it's within the fear to preach. Sometimes there is a fear to preach to certain people who might use it otherwise or might take it in the wrong way. This fear is a state of cautiousness. One is cautious and not making others offense. For example, in my personal case, in Middle East, when I'm there, I avoid at the maximum to show a picture of Narasimha Dev in his Adonis form trying to kill Hiranyakashipu. Because people who are, they are not connected to Vedic culture, they first, they don't accept that Lord takes form. Second, they will not accept that he's half human, half lion.
But it's not about the secondary points. It's about, it's like this. Okay, let us say, like you're saying, Middle East. So Middle East is home to, you could say, basically all of the Abrahamic religions.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if we're talking about there's one Supreme Lord, right? And it's about our relationship as an individual soul with that Supreme Lord. And the way of interacting or the basis of that relationship is based on that as we are servants, he is Lord. And that is done through the mood of devotion. Is there going to be any problem with any of the Abrahamic religions?
No, as long as you have it at this platform, no problem.
It's not a matter of that. This, but what we're talking about here, this is the highest platform. What we're discussing. This is Vedanta.
Yeah.
See, many times devotees will take this to be lower platform. No, this is the higher platform. You understand? So we're not discussing conditioning here. Because when you get to conditioning, that's where the problems come in. So we just talk on that level of what is actually the essence of the philosophy. The primary of the primary. If you discuss that, there is nobody who will disagree.
Yeah, and it happens with me, but when you go through...
But that point is you don't need to get to there.
Yeah.
Because the point is this is what has to be done. Now, if you're going to use this name or that name, that's another thing. In other words, they're worshipping that same person in a different way. So that's why we are not worried how they worship or like this. This is how this is given in our line. This is the tradition here. So, because the element is, if you want to get to the spiritual world, this is the method. But the point is it's about the principle of it. The secondary is just what's recommended. Right? So the secondary you don't have to get down to. His point is that everything is by the Lord's grace. Therefore, if something's going well for you, that's by the Lord's grace. If it's not, it's because we're somehow not displeasing for you. That'll work for everybody. So therefore, and the point is it's not about just, God make it nice for me. It's about how to please God. In other words, I'm in a nice situation, I'm in a difficult situation, I still remember the Lord. That's the point to learn. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to do. Then if you need to bring that down into some example for them that works in their life, then you do that. But the point is you're establishing these principles of Vedanta philosophy. And once that's nicely established and they agree, then there may be some opening for discussing some secondary aspects. Right? But it's always about, the point of glorifying the Lord, being absorbed in the Lord, being in the association of others who are absorbed in the Lord. Everybody's going to say that. They're not going to, the principles of Krishna consciousness, no one's going to disagree with.
They even admire it.
Yes.
As long as you don't touch the Vigraha and certain
So don't, you don't need to touch. The
no,
whole
not me, certain people everywhere. So one guy went to my room, for example, and he liked the picture of Nishinga there, and he took it to his house. And then his uncle, he put it in a frame, he liked it, and his uncle entered to the room, and it was a chaos.
So just tell him, keep it under your pillow or something, that's all. You like the picture, or hide it away.
But no, the consciousness
it's just like
should not be seen as a fear, no? Being cautious doesn't mean it's a fear.
It's not a matter of that, it's a matter of what will work. You're trying to make someone Krishna conscious, that's all. Is that so? Okay. The total material energy is the cause of the material manifestation. But the material energy is caused by him, right? All the manifestations here are caused by the Mahatattva. Right, and the primary creation is there, and then you come into each individual universe in the secondary creation. That's all coming from the material energy, but the material energy is coming from him. Therefore, he's the cause of all causes. Right, material energy is the cause of things, but he's the cause of the material energy. Therefore, he's the cause of all causes, the manifester of intelligence and the senses. He is perceived as the supersoul of everything. Without him, everything would be dead. You, as that supersoul, the supreme controller, are the only one remaining. Now, it means when you go through everything, he's the only one that remains. Because everything has its source. So when you get back, he's the only one that remains that has no source. He is self-sufficient.
said.
Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Therefore, we will take shelter of the philosophy approved by your devotees, giving up the ideas of these learned persons. The Lord is the real form mentioned previously in verse 33. Because of dwelling within all beings, beyond the material senses, you are not visible, but you are definitely known or inferred by the revealing power, abhasa, of intelligence and the senses, sarvaguna. Una prakashair anumiyate bhavan. You are inferred by the revelation of the senses, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.35. Right, so through means he reveals himself through the mind and senses. But it's not that through the mind and senses you can know God. Right? Because otherwise, we think. So it's only through that power of thinking that Krishna reveals himself. But it's not that by our thinking we will reveal the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. You are completely devoid of all material elements. Parya vaseshita. Thus the Shrutis say neti neti. The Lord is not matter. The Loga Bhagavatamrita explains this starting with the following verse. Vina sharira cheshtatam vina bhumyadi samshrayam. Vina sahamsya te karama vikiryasya su durgamam. 102. Without activities of a material body, without the support of material earth, without assistance of others, without undergoing transformation, your actions are hard to understand. Right? So he doesn't do it. He doesn't transform. He gets things done. He doesn't transform. We get things done. We transform. Right? You start cooking. By the end, you've cooked. You're tired. You're hungry. Krishna, he doesn't transform. He remains how he is. But he is the cooking. Have you ever seen cooking become tired? You go cooking and, wow, the cooking's not working today, you know? You put things in the ghee and, you know, and nothing fries, you know? It's hot and, you know, it's been there bubbling. It's been there for half an hour. It's not changing. Has it ever happened? No. So, but he doesn't transform. So that's the whole point, is that he's beyond the senses and mind and intelligence. Therefore, we can only understand him when he reveals himself. You know, by following here, we take shelter of the philosophy approved by your devotees. What's given in the parampara, that's what we accept. That's what will work. All these other things are just mental speculations. You're taking the same thing and just playing with it more and more. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, here's a rug. You put it out like this. Could we turn the rug this way? Yes, you could. What about at a diagonal? Yes, you could. What about if, you know, 1 degree off that diagonal? Yes, you could. What about 2 degrees the other way off the diagonal? Yes, you could. What if we turn it over on the other side? You understand? We're just saying, put the rug on the floor, sit on it. You know? And so then they speculate this way, that way. No, it's all, you know. So. The demigods continue. Therefore, O killer of the Madhu demon, incessant transcendental bliss flows in the minds of those who have even once tasted but a drop of the nectar of the ocean of your glories. Such exalted devotees forget the tiny reflection of so-called material happiness produced from the material senses of sight and sound. Free from all desires, such devotees are the real friends of all living entities. Right? Because you're a real friend, you have nothing to gain here. Right? In other words, the less someone's attached to the particular situation that you're in, they can give advice, they can be a friend. The more they're attached to the results of that, then the problem. Right? So from that side. And from the other side is that they give Krishna. Right? So giving Krishna, then that makes everything perfect. That makes them the real friend. Right? So they have nothing to gain from the material. They only give Krishna. So that's, they are therefore the real friends of all living entities. Others are friends, but they're the real friends. They're like, Krishna is the real friend. Offering their minds unto you and enjoying transcendental bliss, they are expert in achieving the real goal of life. Right? So that's love for Krishna. Right? So they, tasting this, just one drop of this, they forget all about the material. as Krishna says, by tasting the higher taste, you give up the lower. So the higher taste is seeing it in relation to Krishna as a person. Right? That's what's going to give up everything, because that's going to be the bhakti. Seeing his position, his prowess, and his authority, that will elevate us, purify us, and all that. And it's a higher taste than the lower of not following. But once we get to that point of him as a person, that aspect, that's going to be the taste that all other things pale and there's no interest in anything in the material world. And if one has like that vision, that means then you can see anything that anyone else is doing in that relationship also. That there's nothing of interest other than his connection to the Lord. Therefore, they can inspire you to do that activity connected to the Lord. Right? So it's not actually for them an external activity. Right? They see it all connected to Krishna, so they're teaching us how to do that. But because we generally see only the secondary aspects, we take it as a secondary aspect. Right? You know, so the brahmacharis think only if you're brahmachari, then that's real. The grihastha think only if you're grihastha, then that's real. But it's not. It's about whatever your position, connect. Krishna is the brahmachari. Krishna is the grihastha. This. Right? He is that. But the point is that connected to him as a person, doing that to please him as a person, that's the thing that will be nice. Right. Oh Lord, you are the sole and dear friend of such devotees who never need return to this material world. They don't need to. They may come for preaching, but they don't need to. Right? We tend to come back here because we need to. How could they give up engagement in your devotional service? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Having criticized those opposed to the Lord, they now praise the devotees. The devotees have forgotten material enjoyment by the bliss of prema arising by tasting just one drop of the nectar of Krishna, of your glories, or Krishna's glory. Because the devotees are completely devoted to the Lord's service, they do not worship anyone else, such as devatas. Ekantina, right? So Vaishnavism is technically called Ekayana. Right? It's one-pointed bhakti. Right? So that's the Vyavasayaktika Buddhi. It's one-pointed. Right? The materialist then is multi. They you know, the demigods, their family, money, you know, like that. You know, so kind of more vaudevillian presentation. A very old movie, I think. I'm not sure when it was, 30s or 40s or, you know, 20s or something, that at one point there was all the big guys, the big businessmen, they're all sitting at the board table. So when they were about to start the meeting, first they all rose to salute the Supreme. And at the end of the table, in the little niche there, there was a dollar sign. And so they all get up and offer their respects, and then they sit down, and then they have their business meeting. Right? You know, so there's a variety of, you know, devatas here. Right? However, the devatas and sages are even more pleased with them if the Lord is served, all beings are served, since he is the friend of all beings and the soul of all beings. So when Krishna is served, the devatas are more pleased than if you serve them. Those who reject service to the Lord, the false yogis and others, act against their own welfare, whereas the devotees act for their welfare. Svartartha Kushala. So these so-called yogis and spiritual, they act against their own welfare and against everybody's welfare. But the devotees are working for their own welfare and for everybody's welfare, because when you please Krishna, everybody's happy. Yeah?
Can I give an example?
Yes.
One time there was a mystic yogi in Varanasi or somewhere. I saw one, he had 27 years with his arm like this.
Yes.
And
yes.
They were taking him in a rickshaw just to show people and collect money.
Yes.
And I remember that Sumaka Maharaj, he was the Nishkan Sumaka Swami.
Yes.
He told us the story. He met one guy, he had 80 years with the arm like this for 80 years. It was completely dry.
Right.
But then before he died, he realized that he just wasted his time. No one could get benefit, nor he could get benefit. But he said, please Krishna, at least let me take birth as a devotee to serve you.
Right.
In my next life. Right. So many mystic yogis, like Kumbh Melas, they do many things which do not serve them at the end, nor serve any other people.
Yes.
It's like Janivas was telling me about the gold Baba that now he saw in Ujjain. 15 kilograms of gold he has on his body. It makes no benefit, nor for him, nor for anybody.
Yeah.
Which have millions.
It's a lot of weight to drag around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can ask Bhaktanjali, he can think about it.
Okay. 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 Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govinda Premananda.